On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're zooming in on issues hitting families in this pandemic and what the next 2 years state budget could mean for the agency that's responsible for providing services to assist children and families. One overriding issue here, child care costs. They're high, unaffordable for many families. The child care crisis has only worsened in the pandemic. Share your family situation with child care and other issues. How is our state doing in protecting the most vulnerable children? Are you going through an adoption or are you a foster parent? What would you like to share? Join in at 800-642-1234. Emily Amundson is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. Secretary Amundson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. It's nice to be back.
Well, before we dig into the governor's budget, what kind of stress is the pandemic putting on Wisconsin's child welfare system and families in our state?
Sure. Yeah, I think that this has just been, obviously an unprecedented year, coming up on a year. And I think that we have all learned so much about how to combat toxic stress, how to work within this new normal that we're all experiencing. And, it feels like it was about a year when we were all starting to process the pandemic and the effect that the pandemic was having on our child welfare system. So recall about a year ago when schools went virtual, on a moment's notice, we were really grappling with a very significant decline in the number of reports that were coming in. And the good news is that I think as we've adjusted to our new normal, we've really seen the system sort of respond appropriately. So right now, we really see a system that is continuing to sort of see a downward trend in the number of overall reports, but also in the number of kids that are removed from their homes and the number of kids that are in out-of-home care. I think that there's different ways to look at that. And certainly what we're seeing in child welfare agencies across our state is with that decline in the number of reports, we're also seeing an ability to work these cases and really put the time and the care into the cases in a way that I think is having a significant impact on families in need.
And when you say a decline in the number of reports, you're talking about potential cases of child abuse?
I am. Yes, we've seen, and it's just a slight dip. And so really about this time last year, we're almost on par for what we would see in a normal year. And that's, in my mind, that's the system learning how to respond to a new normal. Usually our mandated reporters of law enforcement and educators provide the vast majority, almost 50% of our referrals for child abuse and neglect. Now, about half of those referrals, little more than half of those referrals are screened out. But we're seeing those same two groups really, responding the way that they would normally respond. And so it's sort of a testament to how the system does learn how to respond to a new normal.
You know, we had talked about how caseworkers had to adjust how they meet with children and families. How has that been in the winter months? Because before you were trying to meet outside or, between the glass and the door, how is that going?
Yeah, well, we've gotten very creative over the last year. And I think what we've learned is that there are some things that can be appropriately done using virtual technology. And so some of the check-ins, some of the sort of weekly meetings and things like that can be appropriately done over the virtual technologies that we've all become conversant in. I think that you're right. There were a lot more outside meetings. I know I heard of caseworkers getting very creative in terms of, coming up and talking through screen doors and things like that. But at a certain point, we also grappled with the reality that caseworkers needed to be able to see their kids and families. And that is why we advocated so strongly that our child welfare workers needed to be included in that first vaccination wave, and they were. And so what we're seeing across our states is more and more of our child welfare workers are fully vaccinated and are able to carry on and feel confident about when they need to go in and meet with a family in the home, mm-hmm. that they can do that.
The governor wants to increase funding by $15 million over the two-year budget to help counties handle child welfare cases. Why is more funding needed?
Oh, boy. Well, this is just a huge budget for kids and families when it comes to making some changes to the child welfare system that are really guiding us in that national direction. And so there's a piece of federal legislation called Families First. And this is really a shift, kind of a historic shift in the child welfare system that really tries to keep kids with their family whenever possible. If that's not possible, we need to keep them in the community whenever possible. We know that kids need their family. Kids need to be feeling safe and secure with folks that they know. And so that focus on prevention means that we need to create a whole lot more supports around families that may be experiencing vulnerability, families that may need extra help. And that takes a lot more sort of hands-on casework. That takes a lot more support, a lot more evidence-based practice. And so this potential increase, coupled with some of the other proposals, is really about making sure that our child welfare workforce across the state has the adequate caseload that they need, has the number of staff that they need to truly provide these families the supports and the safety services and the prevention services that families need to be able to keep their children at home whenever possible.
In the pandemic, have you struggled with caseloads for staff, for caseworkers, or is it a manageable load?
Well, you know, it's been interesting because obviously we are on the heels of a historic increase in CFA, and that was really CFA aid, children and families aid, and that was really a successful, you know, budget campaign 2 years ago, mm-hmm. to say caseloads have ballooned as a result, primarily because of the opiate and methamphetamine epidemic in the state. We were seeing all-time high, you know, caseloads and number of kids in out-of-home care. And so that investment really got us started on a path of trying to, you know, hire more workforce, trying to reduce those caseloads. And then, of course, you know, over the last year, what we've been able to see is because of the reduction in the number of referrals, you know, this slight downtick in the number of referrals, particularly at the beginning of the pandemic, I would say that caseloads started to kind of even out a little bit, and folks are experiencing the benefit that comes with that, you know, the additional time and energy that they can apply to these more complex cases. Because frankly, what we're seeing during the pandemic, we're not necessarily seeing a reduction in the number of complex cases. So when you do get a screened in case, chances are it may be a little bit more complex and it may be a little bit more time intensive for that caseworker.
We're discussing the governor's state budget proposal with Emily Amundson, Secretary of the State Department of Children and Families. What questions do you have for the head of DCF? What would you like to share? What policy or program do you think would benefit the state's children and families, especially the most vulnerable children? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. I want to look at opioids here for a second, and you had mentioned there that the growing caseloads in the past perhaps had to do with abuse of opioids and methamphetamine. Is substance abuse still a growing factor in child welfare referrals and placements?
Oh, undeniably so, yes. And I think that when we look across this budget, I mean, obviously there's been a ton of work that's been done over the last few years, both legislatively and across a number of state agency budgets to stabilize this trend that we're seeing. I think the pandemic has exacerbated a lot of those substance abuse issues for families. I think what I'm excited about when I look across the breadth of the governor's budget, you know, you look at the Department of Health Services budget, and you look at some of the investments that they are proposing to make in substance use and abuse, crisis stabilization services for adults. And I think about how, and then obviously Medicaid expansion and what that would bring to the overall milieu of services that we could offer adults. And then you look at the children and families budget, and you look at just this shift that we're trying to undertake in focusing on the family. So rather than always looking at the child and saying, what does the child need to be safe in home? We start to think about, like, how do we support the family in making sure that the family is a place where all members of the family are safe at home? So, you know, things like in-home, you know, safety supports, home visiting programs, some of the work that we've done, you know, across the agencies during the pandemic around rental assistance and heating assistance. These are all things that help.
So looking more holistically at what the family needs. Yeah. We have DCF Secretary Emily Amundson with us. Parents, what support would you like more of from state government to help children the most? Is your family working with a caseworker? How has that been in the pandemic? How is your child doing? 800-642-1234. Still time to talk. Back in a minute with Secretary Amundson here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Emily Amundson, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. The need for foster families continues to grow. The foster care coordinator for Eau Claire County told the student news site of UW-Eau Claire in December that recruiting foster families has become more difficult for social workers during the pandemic. Are you a caseworker or a foster parent? What can you tell us about these times and caring for vulnerable kids? What should the state do to step up with more budget to help children and families? 800-642-1234. DCF Secretary Emily Amundson is with us for 10 more minutes. Secretary, let's look closer here at foster families. Payments to foster care providers would rise 2.5% in 2022 and again by that amount in 2023 under the governor's proposal. Why do foster care providers need more money?
Oh, boy. Well, this is really in line with that shift that we're trying to make to the whole system, right, around family first and making sure that children who do have to be removed for their home for a short period of time or a longer period of time, that they are in the most home-like setting possible. And that's really a huge shift for the system to make. So we're recognizing that home-like setting is absolutely critical and critically important. That's what kids know. That's where they're coming from. And so this idea of foster care, every level of foster care being so important to making that shift in the system. And we need to make sure that those rates keep up with the rising costs of all of the elements of raising and taking care of kids. I think the other piece that I want to highlight here is the kinship care rate increase. So that's a rate increase for relative caregivers. And again, that's critically important to the philosophy of making the shift in our system. We're saying, you know, kids do better if they do have to be removed from their home for a short period of time or a longer period of time. Kids do better when they're with folks they know, when they're with their kin. And this rate has been historically kept much lower than the foster care rate. And this budget would seek to change that. I think really investing in family find resources and making sure that if there are available caregivers out there that are relatives, that we're able to find them and we're able to resource them appropriately so that kids can be with family whenever possible.
Whether it is the kinship rate or the foster care provider rate, how much do the state's payments typically cover the costs, the actual costs of caring for children?
Well, that really varies across the state. We know it's you know, frankly, never enough. And yet we do have a tiered system. And that's one thing that I'd like to highlight is that when we talk about the need for more foster families in our state, what we really are desperately in need of are those higher level continuum of care foster placements. And so we call them treatment foster care. And usually these are folks who step up and they say, you know, we have specialized training to help, deal with kids who have experienced trauma or kids who need additional mental health supports. And so in a lot of communities across the state, it can feel really frustrating because counties will say, you know, we have an appropriate number of foster care families in our pool, but we may not have the right matches in terms of the level of care needed for a particular kiddo. And so that's really something that we need to work on across our state. And again, I think that these increases will help, but it's also just frankly, it's a calling and it's a labor of love. And I think that we have to continue to treat it as such. I know communities that have really invested in making sure that there are cohorts of support for foster care families, making sure that they have people they can turn to for respite care when they need a break from doing this important work in communities. Folks that have invested in that way have seen a strong foster care cadre stay in their community. And so I think working with counties to really make sure that they have the supports that they need to be able to support their foster community is vitally important moving forward under Family First.
So it sounds like you can't really make a blanket statement that there is a shortage of foster care providers because it might look very different from one county to the next.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think that can sometimes add to the frustration that folks feel when they've invested the time and energy and resources to become a licensed foster family, and they're saying, you know, nobody's calling, or we're not getting, you know, we're not being tapped. Sometimes it's because of that mismatch in that level of care that, again, these kids that we're seeing in care right now often come with more complex care needs, and that's why building this milieu of services in our state to help care for the kids that we have in care right now is really important.
We're discussing the state budget proposals with Emily Amundson, Secretary of the State Department of Children and Families. What's been your experience with our state's foster care system or with child welfare services? What is communication like these days with your caseworker? What could be improved? What insights do you have? 800-642-1234 to join in. Let's look at a big area of struggle, child care. Governor Evers' budget seeks to expand access to affordable child care with $53 million in annual state funding for providers with these extra incentives for infant and toddler care. What is the state access? What is the concern here, and what are you trying to address through this budget?
Sure. So this is just an absolutely historic investment in child care. As folks know, usually child care is treated, you know, sort of like a private business. It's really looked at very differently than the K-12 system in terms of, you know, the private business angle and then obviously the parents' ability to either seek and afford child care or not. Mm. And I think what we're seeing here is that across our state, if we don't have accessible, high-quality, affordable child care, we see what happens, and I think the pandemic has laid that bare. When childcare closes, the economy really, really suffers as a result. We've seen just an absolutely massive bleed of females from the workforce as a result of childcare access being pinched through the pandemic. And I think we need to reconcile with the fact that without some state support braided into the system, we are not going to have a viable child care system moving forward. And that's particularly important for infants and toddlers. There are so many fewer spots for infants in particular than there are folks that need that care. So this is really a recognition that child care is a backbone to local economies. And without increasing state support, we're going to lose that resource from communities, particularly rural communities. Over 50% of rural communities are deemed child care deserts, which means there just aren't enough spots for the families that need them. We've got to change that.
Under the budget proposal, workers could use family and medical leave if a school or a child care provider closes unexpectedly. Why do you support that change?
Well, I think that anyone who has worked over the last year with colleagues who have felt that, that stressful moment of being told, our classroom is closing for 2 weeks. This just happened to my brother's family. Sunday night you get an email and Monday you have childcare issue that lasts for 2 weeks long. That's the kind of support that we need to give to families in the midst of a pandemic where schools and child care centers have to open and close at a moment's notice to keep our kids safe. That's an incredibly important provision.
Secretary Amundson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. Appreciate it.
Emily Amundson is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. Earlier, we talked with State Representative Mark Bourne of Beaver Dam. Just ahead, it's an hour-long conversation about end-of-life planning. A lawyer joins us to discuss wills, estates, trusts, your questions. This is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.